This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We've spent the past half hour talking about the wave of protests across the country in response largely to ICE officers raiding communities, detaining immigrants who are here without legal status, and also the deployment of the National Guard in response to some of these protests. But this protest movement didn't just appear last week. There has been a long history of organizing here, especially within Latino communities, which have obviously long led the fight for immigration justice efforts. So what is the legality of some of these ICE raids and deportations? What is this wave of, would you say, resistance really about? And, you know, what sort of historical and social context do we need to understand what is happening now? And what is going to continue happening, I should say. President Trump posted on his social media site last night, ICE officers are herewith ordered by notice of this truth, referring to the name of his site, to do all in their power to achieve the very important goal of delivering the single largest mass deportation program in history. In order to achieve this, we must expand efforts to detain and deport illegal aliens in America's largest cities, such as Los Angeles, Chicago, and New York, where millions upon millions of illegal aliens reside. End quote. Although it goes on from there. Again, that is President Trump on his social media site last night. So for the rest of the hour, we are talking about the context of this and where we go from here. Joining me is Sochil Bada, professor of Latin American and Latino studies at the University of Illinois, Chicago. Welcome to you. Welcome to the 21st Show. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for inviting me.
Gilberto Rosas is chair of Latino Studies at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. Thank you for being here as well.
Thank you as well. I'm also a professor of anthropology and the department is Latino Studies at UIUC. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And we are finally also joined by Cesar Cuauhtemoc Garcia Hernandez, who is the Gregory Williams Chair in Civil Rights and Civil Liberties at The Ohio State University, also the author of Welcome the Wretched in Defense of the quote-unquote criminal alien. Welcome to you as well.
It's my pleasure to join the conversation. Thanks for having me.
So, Sochil Bada, I want to start with you. I know last Monday you were at a rally to support the release of David Huerta. Tell us, who is that?
Well, David Huerta is an organizer with the CIU in California, and the labor unions here in Chicago were deeply concerned about his arrest while he was peacefully protesting the ICE raids in his native state of California. He is U.S. born, children of immigrants, and he had been arrested. So like the labor unions, along with many other local organizations, including the Illinois Coalition of Immigrant and Refugee Rights, in many groups that are part of that big tent umbrella. And I will say that these were the two main type of organizations who gathered, along with a few faith-based organizations also, and churches and leaders of faith, this past Monday, Daily Plaza. So Congressman Chuy Garcia, for example, was also there supporting the demonstration and the peaceful rally to demand the immediate release of David Huerta. Most organizers with SEIU and the rank and file were there. It was very spirited, and that was coordinated along with multiple cities. Everybody was in many cities, small and large, throughout the country after SEIU called for this solidarity with David Huerta, because we thought that that was completely unacceptable. It was completely unacceptable to have a major leader of the organized labor in the country be snatched by ICE, and not only that, that he had been taken to the ground, he was injured, he was first hospitalized, and then he was arrested. So this was like the reason why there was this like very important protest. I will say that that was the kickoff of the protests last week. In Chicago, because subsequently there were multiple peaceful also demonstrations and protests outside ICE facilities in downtown and also along the south side in South Michigan Avenue. Also to be vigilant about this new trend where ICE is taking people outside of their court hearings when they go for their asylum requests to present themselves in court for these so-called check-ins. And they are waiting for them at times outside of the facilities. And they have taken people like that already. So the Organized Communities Against Deportation, one of the organizers was taken using that method a couple of weeks ago. And there is also reports of more and more people being taken from ICE using those tactics.
Professor Garcia Hernandez, you're a legal expert. Can you talk about how unusual it is that people are, you know, as we just heard, they're following the law, they're showing up at their, you know, appointed hearings, and then these arrests are happening. Is this a departure from past practice here?
Yeah, it's certainly not common at all to see ICE officers stationed sometimes within the very buildings in which immigration courts are housed, and other times just outside the door, waiting for folks to leave hearings at which they ostensibly have had some success, where the immigration judge says, you know, we're going to dismiss this case against you. It's usually a moment of celebration, a moment of relief for many folks. Only to find out that actually that's just the precursor to winding up arrested and put into a fast track deportation proceeding. And so there we are seeing something that is historically uncommon, and I think threatening to scare people away from showing up to those very legal proceedings in which, you know, their future is on the line, but in which many instances they actually have legal claims to make. But of course, if they're afraid that in the process of making those legal claims, they might actually inadvertently, unknowingly wind up detained and on a alternative fast track deportation process, then lots of people, my concern is that lots of people are going to think twice about whether, on balance, it makes sense to appear for court dates.
And it certainly wouldn't be, and we need to take a break now, so I'll just say this as we do that, it would not be the first instance where we have seen people sort of given this choice, right? I guess you're condemned if you do, condemned if you don't. Show up, don't show up. And we've also seen the administration, you know, taking people with legal status and then sort of changing that status on them and then, you know, not telling them and arresting them. We can talk more about all of this when we return here on the 21st show. If you want to join us, 800-222-9455. This conversation will continue after a short break. Please stay with us. It's the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking for the rest of the program today about the continuing to talk about some of the protests that have sprung up in relation to the immigration enforcement tactics of the Trump administration. We're talking about the legality of some of those tactics and just the broader question of how we handle immigration in the context for patterns of immigration and migration that we have seen here in America. My guests for this part of the show are Xochitl Bada, who is a professor in the Department of Latin American and Latino Studies at UIC, University of Illinois, Chicago, also co-edited the book New Migration Patterns in the Americas, Challenges for the 21st Century. Also with us, Cesar Cuauhtemoc Garcia Hernandez, who is at The Ohio State University, chair, the Gregory Williams Chair in Civil Rights and Civil Liberties there. Also author of the book, Welcome the Wretched, In Defense of the Criminal Alien. And also with us, Gilberto Rosas, who is professor of anthropology and chair of Latina and Latino Studies at University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, and the author of Barrio Libre, Criminalizing States and Delinquent Refusals of the New Frontier. 800-222-9455. If you want to join us today, 800-222-9455. 9455. Professor Gilberto Rosas, put the protests we're seeing today, please, in context with what's happened in the past.
First off, thank you very much for this invitation. I want to invite the audience to take a step back and look across the globe today at the resurgence of right-wing governments and their careful and deliberate targeting of migrants, of border crossers, and the like. You see this appearing in Europe, in India, in the Americas, as well as the United States. I've written several books on border crossings and border context. And I would argue to you that that the protests in Los Angeles and elsewhere across the United States mark the culmination of long-term processes. Processes that include the use of militarized forces against civilian migrants. Processes that include the neglect of long-standing policies that prevent the military from engaging in policing practices, but however become regularly relaxed when it comes to migrants. Processes that, for example, have led to the shooting of a young man in Texas in the 1990s, a Mexican-American goat herder who was shot by the military and mistaken for someone involved in the drug trade. These are the contexts that generate movements, be they in El Paso, Texas, where I'm from, be they in Arizona, where I've researched, be they in Chicago, where I have long-term allies and people I really respect, such as Xochitl, be they in Champaign, Urbana this weekend. Migrants, the vast and overwhelming majority of migrants are peaceful people who come to the United States, many who cross the border face many obstacles, sometimes violence, sometimes the deserts and the like. The deserts have been organized to effectively wilt them in the heat and the sun. Migrants are channeled into the deserts where they face the heat, the sun, and the elements. And they arrive here and they work. And then we have the current administration bring ICE to their homes, to their lives. And yes, protests occurred. And as we note, as the media has noted repeatedly, the vast majority of protests have been peaceful. I also want to make one other point. While Latinx formations are part of the leading edge of migration protests, we cannot forget that there are Caribbean migrations, the Caribbean from and elsewhere across the globe, Asian migrations, and their involvement in these movements are paramount.
Indeed, and we may even see targeting of Ukrainians here in America as well. Let me share an email we got from Terry in Springfield, who said, "My thinking is President Trump has vilified the undocumented community in the U.S. as a distraction to gain more control and push his agenda for his own benefit. He doesn't care that we have a very broken immigration system for decades, yet have built an economy on the backs of the undocumented. He isn't pragmatic in anything he does," Terry says, "and has proven to be cruel and ineffective regarding immigration. Horrific." Thank you for sending that message in, Terry. Professor Garcia Hernandez, talk about the argument in your book, because, you know, Terry there referenced our broken immigration system. You take issue with the entire concept, right, of the criminal alien, as the president likes to say it.
Yeah, that's right. Like the United States is a country in which folks across the generations have risen to the occasion when that's been demanded. But we're also a country in which failure is commonplace, in which imperfection and fallibility are commonplace. And then that's a feature not only of our humanity, it's a feature of social policy in which we have so many fissures, so many cracks, and through which people can fall in moments of weakness, moments of despair, and from which it's quite difficult to get up. And that has absolutely nothing to do with anyone's citizenship or anyone's immigration status. And that's why I've long suggested that we ought to try to dispense with the notion that we can't and successfully divide humanity into a box of desirable people and undesirable people. The reality is that we are all a mixed bag. When we stand in front of the mirror and look at ourselves honestly, and certainly when we look back in our own family histories, and peel back the layers of romanticization that are so easy to ascribe to our ancestors as the years go by. And those harsh moments, those grating features of a personality in the past, become more distant, but regrettably, immigration law really ties migrants to their moments of weakness, to their worst moments, and so often overlooks their finer moments. I think what we're seeing in these arrests that were inside immigration courthouses or just outside the doors of immigration is a reflection of that. And these are folks who are, by definition, going through the legal process. They are doing exactly as been asked. This is true as well of the folks who have been granted parole or temporary protected status, these various legal options that exist in laws and enacted by Congress, and who suddenly are now finding that the federal government is stripping them of their legal permission to live and work in the United States. And these are people who are very much jumping through the hoops, whatever the hoops are that the federal government imposes on their path. They are going through those hoops, and there might be policy disagreements about whether that was a wise move by the Biden administration or an unwise move. But the reality is that these are folks who are trying to figure out what are the requirements that are being imposed and being asked of me, and then going through the process of satisfying those requirements, only to then have that yanked out from underneath them, and converting them from somebody who is in the United States lawfully to somebody who's in the United States unlawfully, and in that moment making them much more susceptible to detention and deportation, and that makes them easy prey for the Trump administration's policy, because these are people whose names, addresses, identities, and workplaces are known to the federal government. And so if the goal is to increase the numbers of detentions and deportations, then targeting the folks who have willingly identified themselves to the federal government is a great way to start.
Professor Sochiobada, so based on what we just heard there, it seems to me that the fear is the point in the communities, right? Can you talk about, and I should say, unfortunately, we only have a few minutes left in our time together, but how is that fear playing out? How are people preparing for this next round of enforcement that the president says is coming?
Yes, absolutely. Fear is the number one enemy from organizing. So it's been incredibly difficult to convince people that they have rights, especially for workers. Like workers are, doesn't matter if you are undocumented in this country, you still have rights, and those rights are enforced. This is why, like, the Department of Labor constantly does campaigns to remind workers that it doesn't matter the immigration status, they can still defend themselves from wage theft and from all other abuses from employers. So these are like two very difficult circumstances right now, that people are afraid not only of immigration rates, but they are afraid of exercising their rights to have access to minimum wage, to have access to a healthy workplace, and all those things. So it's incredible to me that despite all fear and all this campaign of xenophobia, because this is what it is, it's clear xenophobia of the United States against Blacks and Latinos, because let's not forget that they are also doing roundups and deportations of Cameroonians and all other immigrants from Africa as well. They do not play so much in the news because of differences in volumes, but this is also happening as well as we speak. So, but even besides all those fears that community has, like the city of Chicago was able to put a 75,000 people protest on Saturday, in which they were, among many other things, protesting against ICE raids. So yes, fear is a very important factor that, for example, did not create the expected amount of people protesting on May 1st. Organizers in Chicago spent a considerable amount of time since early January trying to replicate the very successful protests that happened in the year of 2006 against the Sensenbrenner Bill, one of another very draconian bill against immigrant communities back then that year. They tried to create that same momentum, but unfortunately, that lots of people were afraid, and only about 50,000 or so came out on May 1st in Chicago. So this is why I am very humbled by the experience and the resilience of these communities, that against all odds and all this fear that has been created, they are doing their best to try to defend their rights and get educated in what they can do and they cannot do amidst this tremendous threat of deportations.
We are going to have to leave it there. Professors Xochitl Bada, Gilberto Rosas, and Cesar Cuauhtemoc Garcia Hernandez, thank you all so much for being with us and sharing your expertise and perspective with us today on the 21st Show.
Thank you, Ryan, for inviting us.
Thank you.
Pleasure. It's been a pleasure.
That is all the time we have for today. Thank you to everyone who sent text messages and emailed and called into the show today. We really appreciate hearing from you. Keep in touch. Talk at 21stshow.org is the best way to keep in touch with us when we are not live on the air. Or you can join our texting group, and you can find out how to do that at our website, 21stshow.org. Coming up tomorrow, Atlantic writer Olga Khazan returns to the program. We talked with her a couple of years ago. She wrote an article about personality change. Now that has become a book. We're going to be talking about that for something completely different tomorrow on The 21st Show, which is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thank you for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.